Hello and welcome to Pyro Toasty Talks. I'm the hosty with the mosty, David, and I'm here with Renee and Brian and Zona, and we're talking about how to protect and transport your art and product to and from shows and stores and wherever it is that you feel like you need to place your art, strangers' yards, wherever. So we're going to talk about all the different methods that we use to ensure that our art stays beautiful and wonderful through its final destination. I'm going to make jokes, and that's pretty much it. Now, over to Brian or Renee or Zona or whoever else is talking besides me.
Hi.
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 Great job, everyone.
So, let's... how have you all been? I haven't spoke to you in a few weeks.
It's been great. I don't know how you want me to answer that.
Our household is, it's doing okay. From a business standpoint, we've had a rough summer, and we're turning the corner into a better fall, so that's good. But how are things in North Carolina?
Things are good.
Hot.
What?
It's hot. It's been hot. Cooler. The summer has been, like, melting. I'm melting. I'm standing in the garage, melting.
I wasn't talking about the weather. But think that it was good, like, from a business standpoint.
Well, Pride was good for us.
Yeah, we had Pride, and we absolutely crushed it.
Fantastic.
It was really good. We sold how many of your big pieces?
I think we made, like, either 6 or 9 collaborative pieces between me and Jessica, and we sold all of them but 2.
Nice.
So we sold quite a few, and it was good. I think overall it was really good. At least for us, it was.
That's awesome.
But it was hot.
It was hot. I mean, and we put up the walls because it was starting to rain. It was like that weekend down here where it was just raining, like it was thunderstorming. So it was just like the second we put up the walls, it was instantaneous. 10 degrees, 20 degrees hotter than it should be. So we're like standing there inside the tent, just. Ugh.
Emanating.
Was it super humid too?
Yeah.
It's North Carolina.
I think that was what it was that made it worse. It wasn't just hot, it was the humidity. It was not a good time.
So circling back to our topic, did did you experience any problems from that sudden like heat and humidity? I know we've had stuff warp on us before if it got too hot too fast.
I didn't notice anything warping, but what I did notice was that the sealant, the polycrylic that I've been using, seemed to like melt on some of the pieces. Not all of them. It was weird. Like transporting some of the bigger pieces, I had put like microfiber cloths on the end to protect the ends, and then I put it in a big bag, you know, to protect it against scratching. And then when we were unpacking, it was like the microfiber cloth was sticking to some of the pieces. But it wasn't on all of the pieces. It was only a few of them. So it was really odd.
Yeah.
Tacky?
Yeah.
That's
it
weird.
It was like it melted, it got tacky, and then it solidified again.
So you had to like peel the cloth off of the art.
Mm-hmm.
And it left all of this like fiber on the piece.
Yeah.
It was the fiber, and then on some of the pieces, because we had yellow microfiber cloths. They're yellow. And not all of the pieces, but like I think one of them, some of the yellow bled onto the art. So I've got to figure out how I'm going to fix that.
That's weird.
It was weird. I didn't think that the yellow was going to bleed, which I wouldn't have gotten yellow, clearly, if I thought it was going
to
bleed.
Well, yeah, it's from fabric. You wouldn't expect a fabric to bleed onto art.
Weird. If it was a darker color, I would have expected that, but okay.
Did you pack them in the hot, steamy, and then unpack them in the cold of your house, relative cold of your house?
Mm-mm.
No, it was when we got there, when we unpacked them,
that we
noticed it. Yeah.
That is weird.
I think the only thing that I thought about was because they stay in the garage. Everything for the business pretty much stays in the garage. We don't bring anything in the house because it kind of doesn't make any sense to bring it in the house. So in the garage, it's not temperature controlled, so it's going to be whatever temperature it is. So even if it's hot in the garage, the product is going to be hot. And then it was just like the same temperature because it's still outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even the car, we had the air conditioner on, but it's not cold enough to really make that big of a difference on product, I don't think. I think the only thing was that that bag was in direct sunlight for a little bit. I mean, the bag was closed, so the art was protected from the UV rays. But I think because it was in direct sun, that it just kind of heated up. That's the only thing that I could think of that would have made it do that. Because none of the other artwork, nothing else, did that melty thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the stuff that was in the bins, didn't happen. It was really odd.
That is odd.
Do you use microfiber for transporting your pieces for, like, when you, like, to wrap them?
Mm-mm, no.
With the absence of microfiber cloth, what do you use to keep your artwork in pristine condition as it travels amongst Pennsylvania?
Okay, so it depends on what it is, because we have different totes allotted for different things. So thinking about my art tote, it's the heaviest tote of all. We have, I think, 3 different product totes, and I try to keep the things that are in those totes organized. So I know what is in which bin, and I have a little label maker, a Dymo label maker, and I've labeled the outsides of the box so I know what is what. And they're like the really thick, heavy-duty, Rubbermaid black and yellow totes. We got ours at Costco because they were on sale, but I know you can get them basically anywhere, Lowe's, Home Depot, Ace Hardware. So that's just the how we carry it. As for the packaging,
can I interrupt you for a moment?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just curious. Why do you have 3 totes? Like, is there a particular logic for that? I'm curious to see if that's...
It's not so much the logic behind it. That's just how much product we have. So, like, my art tote is completely stuffed to the top. It is the heaviest. It's like, I don't know, 60-pound tote. And now that we've started thinking about framing some of my pieces, we're going to need another tote because the art is going to be bulkier and bigger now. It's just mostly what is in the totes that makes it three totes worth of product.
Gotcha.
So the packaging, when I'm looking at packaging my actual art, I mostly use now, this is what I use now. I haven't always used it, but I reuse all of our Amazon mailers, our bubble mailers. So sometimes I'm able to slide a piece of art into a mailer, and it's just like in its own nice little package. But other times I have to cut the mailer open, and I will lay my piece of art like flat in the tote and then lay the opened bubble mailer flat on top of that and kind of sandwich some of my art. That's how I was doing it. That's how I've been doing it for a while, but a couple of shows ago, I got tired of the I don't know what's in each of these bubble mailer game. I got tired of that game because you can't see them, right? Like, they're opaque. You don't know what's in them until you, like, start opening them. And whenever we go to set up my art wall, like, I really want to know what I have. Like, what are my options here? You know, I don't want to have to open every single one. So I have some of these old... they're like the thin, clear plastic sleeves that you can put like a print in or a greeting card. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I had a bunch of those that were old and kind of beat up, and I hadn't used them. So I had put all of the pieces that could fit in one of those in one of those. So now they're clear, and I just kind of like wrap the little flap on top over it. But the problem with that is there's not a lot of, like, padding. It's just a clear plastic sleeve. But I felt okay doing that with some of those pieces because the tote is so stuffed, they're not rattling around. Like, there is no space to really get, like, beat up in there. It's so stuffed.
Do you have hardware on the backs of your pieces?
I do. So that's been the biggest thing since the very beginning. When we were first starting out and my stuff had hardware on the back, like, I know things need to be packaged so they don't get scratched up, but I didn't really know how easily things would get scratched, and I hadn't sealed a lot of my work at the very beginning. All my work was unfinished. So I was carefully loading things and putting them into the totes and all of that. But the hardware was scratching the crap out of the pieces that were underneath it, to the point that it was ruining some of my pieces. Like, if things got too squished, you know, like the sawtooth hanger would dig into the piece of art underneath it, and it could leave divots or it could leave big scratches, especially if it got like squished down and then pushed or dragged or something. It would leave a big mark across the surface of the wood, and it would chip off all of my glitter. Like my glitter paints from my handmade watercolors that I love so much, that was just getting rubbed off so easily. And I was like, okay, this is not this is not cool, you know, because you put so much time into your art just for it to get effed up one time you go to transport it. So that has just been a struggle this whole time. We've thought about doing like the keyhole, but we haven't. I mean, there's a lot. I have a lot of pieces that I just, they're not thick enough to be able to put the keyhole in.
The other problem with the keyhole for us is when we go to set up on the day of the market, we need to hang our pieces up.
Right.
And we generally hang them up on hooks.
Yeah.
And oftentimes those keyhole are not big enough to insert the hook into them. So things end up kind of precariously hung around where, you know, if you breathe too hard on them, they may come tumbling down.
Right.
Whereas if you have like the sawtooth or you had
D-rings and wire,
Those are much easier for us to hang our pieces on our displays.
Well, I got around the whole keyhole thing is I carry hardware with me. What I found is that if I could put a D-ring through one of the screws of the keyhole, if that's what I wanted to do, if I wanted to keep the keyhole for display for that point, if you will, and like I could always just take the D-ring off afterwards too, you know, if I'm gonna sell it.
Yeah.
Right now there's some pieces that have a keyhole and a D-ring, and I've just kind of left it there. Besides the fact, like, because it is a screw, you don't want to strip the screw that's going through the wood,
right?
Because it doesn't have a plug, and we know that if we take it, unscrew it, and then screw it, you know, eventually at some point it's just not going to, you're just stripping it.
Right. Yeah.
So I just kind of left it at that. I have thought about just going only D-rings and wire, but I'm still contemplating because I used to do the sawtooth also, but I found that it is a problem when we're trying to display it, trying to hang it up as a display. And then it's just like, well, what if they take it home? Like, is it also going to be a problem? So, I mean, I have sawtooth, but I've pretty much started not using them, and I've been using the keyhole hangers and the D-rings. So that's kind of what I've been doing lately.
Okay.
Do you find that the hardware tears through the plastic liners? Or have you stopped putting hardware on your pieces before you transport them?
No, they all have hardware. They all get hardware before they go anywhere. I have not found that they've cut through or torn up any of my plastic. It's still not foolproof, though, because there is no padding. It's just, like, the plastic liner, so you still have to be careful. But the way that I've kind of discovered to work around it is instead of, like, sandwiching or stacking your pieces front to back, front to back, front to back, I will take two pieces face to face and put them together, so that way their two faces are touching and the hooks are on the outside. Because if it scratches up the backside of the piece, I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, that's I think where you differ, right? Because you worry too about the backsides getting
dented. I do, but I don't care as much as the front side.
Yeah.
I guess that's me kind of being OCD, where it's just, my theory is, you know, we're asking X amount of money
mm-hmm.
for this piece. Like, we're asking hundreds of dollars for this piece. And I just feel like if I was a customer buying something that's, let's say, $300-$400, and it's scratched, I'm feeling like, well, I don't, like, why should I spend $300 on this item that might have a scratch
right.
or a some sort of damage to it, whether it's the front or back? So that's how I feel. So I get very anal about packaging, because mm-hmm. the way we do it, I had gotten the corrugated cardboard, like the big roll, and I would cut off a piece and just basically wrap it around the item, and then I would tape it so that it has like a sleeve,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I try to stand the artwork up in the tote, and then I'll write on the cardboard what the piece is
mm-hmm.
for the same reason, so I know what it is,
right?
Right. So I have an idea. And I've tried to tell Brian, I was like, well, sometimes he'll pull the pieces out of the bin. And I'm like, don't take the whole cardboard out of the bin. Just pull out the piece, because I've Tetrised it mm-hmm. so that all these things are going to fit in this bin. And if you take out the cardboard, first of all, you're undoing my Tetris. But then I don't know what's in the bin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because even afterwards, I'll be thinking like, well, where is this particular piece? Either it's selling, or I need to take pictures of it. Like, I'll know where it is in the bin, but if you take it out, you've completely messed up my very temporary goldfish memory thing. So I tend to stand it up, and then I'll put the name on it. Like you, I've labeled my bins, but I use the big, thick masking tape.
Mm-hmm.
to put on it, and that way, if I ever have to change, I can just rip it off. Mm-hmm. But I also use black tote, so... So I use the masking tape on that, and some of the pieces I'll use masking tape to write the name on if I'm reusing the cardboard also. But I've gotten moving blankets. There's the quilted ones, the really thick quilted ones,
mm-hmm.
and then apparently there's like thinner ones that you could wrap some pieces in, and those you can cut into pieces to the size that you need it to be. So I ordered some of those, and I want to try using those instead of the cardboard, especially on the bigger pieces, because a bigger piece, it's going to use a lot more of the cardboard, and trying to wrap it in a way that it'll be secure for travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. And, yeah. and it's not, it protects, but it's not sturdy enough to like go through multiple opening
right,
and closing,
right.
you know? So that's why I was thinking the blankets, because I started using the microfiber cloths to try and buffer
mm-hmm.
instead of the cardboard. So, and now we now have this thing with it bleeding onto the artwork. So now I'm just like,
yeah, that's
crap.
Wild.
It is wild. So that's what I plan to do with the bigger
pieces. Yeah. So that's interesting. Okay. You know, the piece that I shared in the Timber Doodle yesterday that David mm-hmm. framed? Well, he mm-hmm. framed another one today. It's my big yellow blue bonnet piece. So now I have at least two pieces, and he is working on my starfish piece. That's the third one. So hopefully for our show coming up at the end of September, we'll have at least these three pieces that are framed. Mm-hmm. But we've never had to really take a ton of care for something like this before. Like, this mm-hmm. is our first time with like a nice frame. And mm-hmm. I said to David, like, I don't want them to get messed up at all. Like, I don't want there to be a dent in the frame. Like, I don't want there to be a scratch on it. I don't know how I'm going to finish them yet, because right now they're unfinished. It's just the raw wood. I don't know if I want to put like a poly on it or just use some of that wax. Like, I don't know what the best option is going to be. So we'll see, finishing wise. But for transport, this is a whole new thing. And I don't know that they're going to fit in those black totes, because the black totes are kind of like, they kind of taper a little bit towards the bottom. Like, I don't know that these pieces are even going to fit in that.
I think.
So we might, when I've shipped pieces, like big wood pieces in the past, I would break down like our old Amazon boxes or whatever and make myself a box out of this scrap cardboard. I think that's what I'm going to have to do. Or we're going to need to get on Uline and order like 1 inch by 18 inch by however many wide inch cardboard boxes and just buy them. Like basically just sleeves, cardboard sleeves.
The workaround to that is, I don't know if you've seen them, but like if you, the like frames tend to have like these corner covers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have seen those.
You can make those right for the corners.
Yeah,
and then use the cardboard that you already have to kind of make a sleeve-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to buy the box. I mean, that's if you wanted to put in that kind of work, but like that would be the workaround so you don't have to actually buy, because those boxes, let me tell you,
they can be very expensive. I know.
Expensive.
I know.
Oh my god. I was looking at the price on one and I was just having a canary about how much one, and the thing is, the bigger the box, you can't buy just one. You have to buy like a pack of 10.
Of 10, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, I don't need 10. I need one. You know, it's crazy. But
yeah.
Anyway. I was thinking, what I started doing when because I still have some pieces with the sawtooth.
Mm-hmm.
And I take, sometimes when I have a piece and I have the cardboard, like it'll just be way too long. So I'll cut it down a little bit, but I'll keep that, like the piece that I cut. So then I was taking a bit of that and like masking taping it to the hardware in the back.
Okay.
So at least it had that buffer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, my theory is that it's less likely it's gonna scrape against anything because,
mm-hmm.
or that the hardware would damage whatever else it's around because it's covered.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a thought.
So I did similar a few years ago. Like, this is when we were just starting out and I was like, WTF, like I cannot have my stuff scratched up. I was putting blue masking tape over the sawtooth hangers in the back, so at least they weren't as jagged. But then whenever we go to shows and we're hanging them up, I didn't want to have to peel off all of the tape, because then I'd just have like a wad of tape to throw away every time and then I'd have to retape them. So like the kind of hooks that we have that hook onto our wall displays, I could just kind of like poke a hole in the tape underneath the sawtooth hanger. So the tape was still on, but there was a hole that the hook could go into. But I didn't like that. That didn't hang around for very long. And then I thought, I will use cotton balls. So then I used cotton balls and I kind of like picked at them a little bit and frayed them and then put them over the sawtooth hanger and then put a piece of tape over that. But that was a huge fail because the hooks that we have aren't big enough. Like I'd have to peel it off every time and the hooks aren't big enough to just leave it on there when I go to hang it on the wall. It's like too bulky up against the wall. And I noticed that the fiber of the cotton ball was sticking to the finish of some of the pieces underneath, kind of like your microfiber towel. Like the fuzzies were getting stuck in the finish. And I was like, no, this is a fail. So that didn't happen. It's definitely been trial and error, just trying to figure out like what the best for me is.
Mm-hmm. With the pieces that I put the cardboard and the tape, I made it so that I only had to peel like half of it off, just enough to expose the hardware and then like to hang it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was taking it down, I would just stick the tape back on.
Okay.
It lasted. I mean, it would last a little bit longer than if I was taking it off and on.
Mm-hmm.
So at least just that one side will eventually lose the sticky.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do about, so you talked about using a rectangular tote, and
yes,
a rectangular tote works very well for pieces that are of a conformed size.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do when you're using pieces that have erratic shapes?
Well, I have not done any big pieces like what you have done, Zona, with some of your fractal art. Like, those don't fit in bins. I haven't done any pieces that big, so I don't know. I think if I had to figure it out right now, like if I had a show tomorrow, I would probably grab some of our old, like, beach towels and wrap pieces in old towels or something. Because I don't want to have to go through trying to make a box last minute or rip up old cardboard boxes. But it can't be unprotected. I don't know, maybe like an old quilt or something. Or old t-shirts. You could like shove it inside an old t-shirt.
Uh-huh. I mean, right, we've used the beach towel.
Mm-hmm.
We've used, because I've got a butt ton of quilted moving blankets from when I moved.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a box of those. So I've been using those also on like the bigger items.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to find a way to do it on like the medium-sized items, because I think the cardboard works really well with the smaller items because they'll fit in the tote and they'll stand up, and that's fine. It's the, like you said, the irregular shaped ones, and like how do we protect that and how do we transport mm-hmm. that? Like right now we've got it. Actually, how did I wrap that one? I think that one is in a quilt, in one of the quilted moving blankets. And right now it's in, I had it in an IKEA bag, but it was too long for the IKEA bag. So, because they had the ones that zipper.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I was using that one. So, like, if it fit in the bag, it was great. But, like, Beacon is just way too, it's too long.
Mm-hmm.
So now it sticks off out the end. So I got moving bags, actual moving bags, and they fit inside, but now I've found that they're actually too big, and like they're still sliding around, mm-hmm. and like I'd rather have it like kind of tight so that it doesn't move around.
Well, especially if you had a piece with like bark, you know, you don't want the bark chipping off, like that's important.
Exactly. It's so
what about,
so that's what we're working on right now, but I was thinking about getting like just like the underbed totes,
mm-hmm. yeah,
for Beacon, something like that, really long,
yeah,
but I wish that I could get one that was that long but like taller, so I could fit like more than one piece in there at a time. Like I think if I got the underbed, I could probably only fit one piece in there because of the thickness, mm-hmm. and then I don't even know about if I'd be able to like protect, maybe with just like cardboard, but then mm-hmm. I worry about cardboard, especially with the price that we're asking, right? Because I don't want it to get damaged. So
could you I was just thinking, because you had said about bags, I was like, well, what about like garment bags, because they're kind of like the right size for a medium sized piece. You could like,
but they're so flimsy.
But I mean you could fold it over and tape the slack out so it wouldn't be able to slide in there, but I don't know.
I mean, I think a garment bag might be like good in place of like the cardboard, right? Like,
yeah,
just like a minimal, like just to protect the piece, but I don't know about like using it for transport. I feel like that wouldn't have enough padding or protection.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, they've got like nicer garment bags, like thicker ones. I've had those. I would still not, especially because those are also heavy.
Yeah.
I don't think those garment bags are going to be strong enough or sturdy enough to deal with the weight. That's the other issue with it. So,
well, I guess if I was transporting them to the show, my main concern is just sliding around and things while people are handling them, but not like when I pack it in the car, it's going to be like nested in with blankets or something to keep it safe in the car. And like, if I get hit by a car and it destroys all my product in the back, that's why I've got business insurance. but
I mean, it would still suck.
It would suck. Yeah. It would be heartbreaking. But at the same time, I'm not as worried about like, I don't know. It's not like there's so much room in our car that, like, the pieces are going to bounce around or a tote's going to fall down on top of them or anything.
I'm trying to think of what I've seen other artists do. At our show this spring, this lady that was catty corner across from us, she had canvases. She was a painter, acrylic, and she had big canvases. But she was reusing boxes that she, I guess, had, like, cut down and then taped. But they were big boxes, like new dishwasher box or, like, big TV box.
Those are nice and sturdy.
They're nice and thick. And I guess, or maybe her husband, I don't know. Her husband was the one who was, like, packing up art as it sold. But she could, like, kind of make her own box out of these giant boxes. Mm-hmm. So that's a thought, but I mean, it's a lot of work. It really is.
I also think that's really expensive. But yeah. Even like one big box, it's the bigger the box, you can't get just one.
You'd have, like, to make your own. Yeah.
You have to order many. Yeah. You'd have to order a bundle and then cut it down to the size that you want.
Yeah.
Or you have to travel and hope that, like, Staples or Office Depot has the size box that you have, because they don't always have the right size box.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't look it up online because they're not even available online.
You might have to drive around your neighborhood after Christmas and, like, look at the trash that's on the side of the road and pick up the TV boxes, because inevitably people just put their new device boxes on the side of the road for trash pickup.
I'm not necessarily advocating this, because I'm not entirely sure the legality, but I think it's probably fine. For what it's worth, if the Postal Service is still doing flat rate boxes, they just give those away for free, and it comes as just a sheet of cardboard.
They come as a box. They're flattened boxes.
Okay. So you can cut it in half.
This is true, though. All you have to do is get on USPS, and you can just order whatever priority mail boxes for free, and they just deliver them to you.
That is. I mean, I have a handful of those. I mean, but they're smaller. I wonder if they have a box that would be.
I don't think they have.
That would be comparable.
I don't know that they have one that's lighthouse sized.
Yeah, I don't think there are any. I mean, they're just like your normal shipping mailboxes or whatever. But you could still order them for free and then
tape them up.
I know.
Yeah, that's a thought.
David, you mentioned garment bags, and Zona, I know you were talking about the IKEA bags. One of the problems that we run into is if we're doing too much transporting using bags.
Yeah.
The nice thing about totes is that totes stack up, and you can organize them neatly in the back of the car so that they don't move around that much. When you have a bunch of stuff in bags, they're all in these odd shapes, and they don't stack very well, and you're kind of worried that they're going to fall over and the piece is going to get damaged if you do a hard right turn. You know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking when you have too much stuff in bags, because it doesn't pack as nicely when you're traveling.
I'm just brainstorming here, but if you've got enough, like, really, really big pieces, you know, we work with wood, so it's sturdy enough that I think you could do this where you would, like, I think you could bundle them together themselves as, like, a big stable bundle and then just wrap the bundle. Like, I'm imagining, like, putting, you know, cardboard spacers or something so they're not touching each other. And then in my brain, it's a ratchet strap, but it probably shouldn't be a ratchet strap. It should probably be something slightly less powerful.
Well, let's talk about ratchet strap.
Well, lashings and bungee cords. They do work. We've tried that.
Yeah.
The bungee cords were a problem, though, because of the metal hooks on the end.
Well, yes, but instead of having the hooks where it's, like, on the top of the piece or the bottom of the piece, if you angle it so it's on the side, even if it's bumping against another piece, it's not denting the other pieces, right? So that was something that I didn't even think about, and then I did scratch a piece, and that was my fault. I had put the microfiber cloth on, I had put the bungee cord on, but it had the metal hooks. And I guess when I had put it back in the bag and it shifted, I guess it moved off of the microfiber and it scratched the piece. I don't even know how I fixed it. So, but, you know, so that's one of the problems with it. But I found that if you did it on the side, like, because there's going to be that little nook, especially with the pieces that I do, because they're not, like, just, they're not rectangular pieces of wood. They're the natural, so they have that curve. If I put it on the side, it's got that little space. David, that idea does work, and we have done that with some of the big pieces, especially before we sold all the pieces. We were doing that in the bag. That bag was heavy. Mm-hmm. But we had it, and then we had it in the bag, and then we bungeed it so that it would stay. But it was heavy.
And then we have the hand truck, right? Which the hand truck, again, having things in totes is super convenient when you're carrying mm-hmm. things on a hand truck, because you can stack them nicely and don't have to worry about them tipping over.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have things in bags, so I'll stack two totes and then a bag on the hand truck while I push it over, which means our ratio of totes to bags needs to be about 2 to 1.
Yeah.
In order for it to be, in order for it to be manageable transporting mm-hmm. between the car and wherever it is we're setting up.
Yeah, I think for us, I'm imagining with these framed pieces that Renee's talking about, like if they don't fit in a tote, I'd stack them up, strap them together. And if they're heavy, I mean, so is everything else Renee asks me to carry for these shows. Like, it's my job.
We work in wood. I mean, what do we do?
Yeah. I earn my pay in the 30 minutes of loading and unloading.
I'm always so jealous of the people who have, like, light stuff. Like, I'm a jewelry maker, and I have one box of jewelry. And it's like, oh, how nice for you. Like,
I had some person criticize me because I was transporting stuff across this golf course that we were set up on, and I'm pushing everything on the hand truck, and because I have to go uphill and downhill, everything's kind of like teetering, and I have to keep stopping to keep things from falling. And she's sitting down in a chair, and she's like, oh, you need to get one of these. And she shows me one of those little wagons
mm-hmm.
with the you know the tiny wheels on it, and I'm thinking to myself,
ain't no way
one tote is just gonna level this thing. You have no idea how heavy this stuff is. I one time we did a show out in Raleigh, and we went in one car, and we didn't have enough room to fit the hand truck. And miserable. When we got there, it was a bit of a hike from where we were set up to where we had to park. And I had to carry each box individually.
Mm.
And I carrying on the shoulder. You ever do that, David, where you carry it on the shoulder? And then you immediately regret it when it comes time to put it down?
I have to load so much wood into the basement in like giant 10-foot boards that I've got a system now. I was
you could see that I had frozen when I made it on my first trip, because I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get this tote full of wood pieces off of my shoulder and onto the ground without it
crashing,
spilling everywhere.
It's going to look terrifying, but the secret is to move quick.
bend with your knees, right?
Yeah.
And I remember that show because I was telling him, he was just like, well, we can't take the hand truck. I was like, we've got to take the hand truck. Because how far? Like, you're talking about carrying what each bin is a good 60, 70 plus pounds.
Oh, they're moving 70 pounds.
You know, how far? You know what I mean? It's not like you take it out the car and plop, you're at your spot. We're going to have to walk it because it was in a park. And he was just like, I'm going to do it. I was just like, you did, but you were like dead and dying. That right after, and then even the next day, I felt so bad. I felt so bad.
Mm-hmm.
We would have had to have sacrificed bringing probably an entire tote in order to fit the hand truck in the car.
Well, that's true. Well, we have figured out how to bring enough that we could fit it in one car. instead of, because we were taking two cars at one point and just taking everything.
But we weren't driving two cars to Raleigh.
Yeah, when we weren't going to drive two cars to Raleigh, but it was also a matter of like, okay, wear and tear on both cars, plus gas on both cars, plus parking for both cars. So we don't generally take two cars anymore. We've figured out that if we cut it down to two bins of product,
and then no furniture.
Yes, no furniture. We can bring the two bins of product, two big bins of product with like all the other totes and toolkits, which we will get to in the next podcast. We can bring all that and it fits along with like a tent or the umbrella or whatever, like the sandbags or whatever else that we need to bring. We figured out how to Tetris it into the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that all depends on if we only bring two bins of product.
We're strongly... Our dream next car is actually a 15-passenger van, so we can, like, rip all the seats out and go, like, go ham with loading for the shows.
I am with you there.
It especially as we get to bigger and bigger pieces of art, because I really, like, there's not going to be a good tote for a 2-foot by 2-foot canvas.
No.
Like, that's just not, you're not going to find that tote. So that's going to travel loose, for lack of a better word.
The quilted moving blankets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get like two or three of those and just wrap that bed.
And that's how I see a lot of the canvas painters transporting their stuff. It's all just kind of like stacked up on the side of their van or whatever with like blankets in between them.
Yeah, that's true. I see a lot of that.
And, oh, I was going to say, something to consider when you're applying to shows out there is for most shows, if you're paying $250, $300 to be there, somebody is around who is like their whole job is to carry your things for you if you need help.
Yeah, they some shows have volunteers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind accepting their help, but usually I'm the one that actually carries the tote, like the product. I'm like, you can carry all the tent things and the tables and all that stuff, but like,
don't touch the spot.
If anybody's going to dump $1,000 of product on the ground, it needs to be me.
Well, we've done shows where they've had volunteers, but they were like high school kids and whatnot. And it's like, I am not that much of a jerk that I'm going to ask you to carry a 70-pound bin, because you're going to pick it up and then you're going to drop it because it's heavy and, you know, it's just too heavy for you. But I also just think like, that's just really messed up. I make them carry a 70-pound bin.
Yeah, you usually carry the heaviest stuff let the other people carry the lighter things.
That's because the heaviest stuff is the product.
It's the most expensive stuff.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you don't want to risk your product being damaged by somebody who is not familiar with the way that you package things, because they may assume that, you know, like you might know that your stuff is, you know, very top heavy and, you know, they carry it. They make the wrong assumption. And next thing you know, they drop all of your product on the floor. I get it. Let them carry the tables. Let them carry the tent. Let them carry the, you know, the box with the tablecloths in it or something like that. But for the product, I think the other thing that I feel when we're at markets like that, when they have people who are helping, I like to let the older couples, or, you know, when you have, you know, a woman who's there by herself, get first dibs on that, because they don't have anybody else to help them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, if they're just sitting around, they don't have anything else to do, you guys can help me. But if they've got a line of people who are waiting for people to help them unload, I'm not gonna drag them away from somebody when, you know, she's got a capable person with her who can carry a box on their shoulder and then not know what to do with it when they arrive at their destination.
Capably.
Yes.
I think the other thing that worries me about people helping, especially if they're going to try and pick up one of the product boxes, is how much concern are you going to have about this box of stuff? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's like, if they don't care about their stuff, or they don't care about your stuff, like, they're not going to handle it with care, mm-hmm. right? And if it's the box of stuff, if it's the bin with your product, like, if they don't care, they're just going to drop it. And then we all know that, like, even with padding, you drop a bin on the floor, there's a very good chance that whatever's on that bottom is now damaged because yeah. it's hit a hard surface. You know what I mean? So I think that's the other thing that kind of worries me is how much care are they going to have mm-hmm. in handling this product? Like, I don't care if you drop the tables or, you know, the bin with all the canopy stuff or whatever. Right. I don't care about that. But the bin with the product, I'm like, I think I will just lose my mind if you drop that.
Have you lost any product as a result of packaging, mm-hmm. transportation?
Yeah.
Renee says yes, and I would have said no. So,
I mean, I've had pieces where, like, the glitter has come off or there's a huge scratch mm-hmm. in the middle of it, and, like, it's just, I can't fix that. I can repaint it, but I can't get the dent out. I can't get the scratch out. I can't, like, this is ruined in my opinion now. And I know that there would be some people who don't care or would be willing to pay a discounted price for it or something, but I care. Like, it's ruined in my head because that's not how I made it. I didn't want a big dent in the middle of it, and now there is. So, like, it's just not even...
Yeah.
It's just a loss. I just cut it as a loss. And that sucks.
I've seen artists do that where they discount their work if it's damaged.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a minor enough damage mm-hmm. that you can hang it up and people wouldn't notice.
Right.
And with wood, a lot of times the dents and dings that you get on it, because wood has natural grains and other things, sometimes those dents blend in a little bit and they're a little bit harder to notice. Yeah. So you can maybe get away with it more than some other mediums. Do you think it's worth putting it at a discounted price and just hopefully getting it into the hands of somebody who would enjoy it but wouldn't be able to afford it at the
full price?
Price that you would, yeah, full price?
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's a personal decision each artist has to make. Because I know that, like, people who have $1,000 pieces, like, and if they really care about their brand, they don't want their discounted stuff out there, you know? Like, mm-hmm. perfect example, the store that I worked at when I lived in Hawaii, when we would have returns, like clothing returns or sheets, you know, we were supposed to, like, damage them before sending them out or tossing them or donating them or whatever, because, like, the company doesn't want their name on things that are at Goodwill, right? Like, how effed up is that, that companies would rather damage their own product than give it away and it just has their tag on it? But, like, they don't want to be associated with thrifted or discounted or whatever, because, like, it tarnishes their brand. So if you really care about your brand image or whatever, then don't. But as for us, I still carry around a lot of stuff that is damaged now. And if somebody ever wants it, they can have it. $10, take it. Like, it depends on what it is, but
I think also as artists, like you said, we know how we made it. We know how it looked when we first finished it. We know what it was supposed to look mm-hmm. like. And I think there are some people who will just fall in love with the piece, but they don't know
right.
that it's not supposed to have that scratch in it. It's not supposed to have that mm-hmm. dent in it. Like, that isn't how we envisioned it. That's not, quote unquote, natural, so to speak.
Right.
So they don't really care.
Right.
It's rustic.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Oh, okay.
But, like, we know. And I think that's the thing, because sometimes, like, if there's a scratch, you might be able to get away with, like, sticking some poly on that, right? And just, like, resealing it, because now it just kind of blends in with everything. But then there's the divots, and you're just like, okay, how? How am I supposed to fix this?
Yeah.
And I get it. It's just like, I can't. Because you can't sand it down.
Right.
Like, there are certain things that you can possibly sand down, and then there's ones that you're just like, I can't. It's sealed. Or the dent is right over a piece that I burned and colored already. Right. Like, I can't sand that down to fix it. Like, how do I fix it? So, no, I hear you. And it frustrates me because then it's just like, well, if I want to get rid of it, if I want to sell it, then I have to discount.
Right.
And I don't want to do that. You know, and I can't sell it for the price I originally wanted to sell it for now because, like I said earlier, I would not want to spend premium dollars on an item that is not premium.
Well, right. David said one time, it's like if you treat your stuff like trash, why should anyone pay top dollar for it? Because you're not valuing it for what it is. Mm-hmm. Like the show, the art and nature show that we did in earlier this summer, the lady directly behind us was a woodworker, and she had bowls, cutting boards, bud vases, all sorts of stuff. But it was totally different than the kinds of things we make. But at the end of the day, she was just throwing shit into her totes, not packaging anything or bundling, like literally just putting stuff, and it's banging up against everything. And David was like, what if you were a customer who just bought something from her that's like $80, and then now you're watching her throw it into the back of her car like it's nothing? Like, how does that feel as the customer? Like, you're watching the maker not even value it. So now I'm wondering why I just spent $80 on this nice thing that you treat like trash. Like, it's just, you know, like, you have to value it as much as the customer is going to value it. And a lot of people don't. We see that a lot at shows. People just, like, throwing shit into their bins. And
I mean, honestly, like, I see people package stuff or seen how people, I'm like, I've seen what they sell. And then I'm just like, how the hell do you package it for transport? Because mm-hmm. I don't see bins. I don't see packing materials. Like, how are you transporting this? I'm fascinated because I'm just like, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
Yeah. You know,
or what can I learn from you that'll make my life easier? Mm-hmm. That'll make our lives easier for transporting. So
I think with something underrated thing here, perhaps, is like, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure when it comes to transporting a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, so you had said about, like, what if I have to take a hard right turn and things tumble? And it's like, well, you know, you're in control of your car to an like, for the most part. You can't stop it if somebody's driving into your lane, but you're up the creek no matter what when that happens. But, like, you know, they always talked about it whenever we were, when I was driving for college, I had to drive a canoe trailer, and they would always say, like, you know, load everything towards the front of the trailer and all this other stuff, because, like, you can always control how fast you accelerate forward, but you can't always control whether or not you're going to, like, have to slam on the brakes. And so, like,
and then slides out the back.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, like, you can control when you're packing up at the end of the show whether or not you're rushing. Like, that's a choice that you make. And we see, I mean, I've seen people have disasters where they overloaded their hand trucks and, like, the box spills and everything goes all over the ground. And it's like,
if you would just take your freaking time, maybe we wouldn't have this problem. But, like, I also get it. I know, I get it. You're at the end of the show. Maybe it's a 3-day show. Like, you just want to go home. You want to get out of there as freaking fast as possible. Like, but it is worth the prevention and the heartache and the frustration if and when something goes wrong. Like, sure, it might take me another hour to pack up everything, but at least I know everything is safe and everything. Like, I might be the last one out at this show, but, like, I know that if something happens to it, it's not going to be because of me, because I took my time. I did everything right. Like,
we're always the last one out from the show.
Yeah, we are.
We're one, like, of the last ones out, usually.
And it's because we're trying to, because I'm like, we need to make sure that we're not just throwing everything in a bin, that it's packaged, like, it's protected, because mm-hmm. I know that when we get home, we're not going to sit here and repackage it. We're taking a bin out of a car and we're sticking it on the shelf where it's supposed to go, mm-hmm. right? It's car, floor, shelf. Like, that's what we're doing, right? We're not thinking about that. And then it's just like, Well, if we do it now, at the next show when we're pulling stuff out,
then it's ready to go.
Exactly. We're not sitting here repackaging what should have been packaged. It frustrates me, the whole having to touch something more than once because you didn't take care of it right the first mm-hmm. time. Like, mm-hmm. so it's just like, if we're going to pack it up, I want to package it up correctly the first time, mm-hmm. like when we're breaking down. So that way we can just, it's done. Yeah. And I'm not sitting here stressing about, well, it's not in the sleeve or it's not in the right sleeve. And then, oh my God, the hardware is going to scrape against that piece. And mm-hmm. how am I going to fix it? And, you know, and all that. So I'm not worried about that. But one thing, and there's only one company that we work with for pop-ups. They put a time limit. Like, they enact, yeah. You have to attend a vendor orientation, and then you have to sign, like, a, it's not really a contract, per se, but it's like, well, this is how they run the pop-ups, whatever, like, their rules, if you will, and then you have to sign it that you understand the rules. So they added, one of the rules was that an hour and a half to break down and be off premises.
Really?
Which, yeah. I mean, it sucks having shows? A time limit, but like an hour and a half is a decent chunk of time.
It is.
But is that outdoors? Is it outdoors?
Yes. Most of the time, yeah, it's outdoors.
See, I feel like that takes even longer than an indoor show.
I think we're normally broken down from our outdoor shows in an hour and a half.
You think so?
We've done it in an hour, but it's about there's doing it correctly, but doing it with urgency. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And packing up with urgency instead of lollygagging. You know what I mean? Like, doing it with speed and urgency and with care at the same time, right? And not just simply taking your time. But I mean, even then, sometimes we'll be working as fast as we possibly can without damaging something. Like, we built grids for our displays. So at the end of it, we have to take the grids down, but they're held together with little plastic pieces. I can't tell you how many of those we've cracked and broken because we're just being really just trying to get it done quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas if we were able to take our time a little bit, or we didn't have to worry about that, then we could take them apart correctly or carefully, if you will. So, but I mean, I kind of get it too, because the person who's doing the organizing that particular event, they can't leave until the last person leaves, type of deal. So, but I think for the most part we get it done in about in time, an hour to an hour and a half.
I think an hour and a half would almost always be enough for us to tear down, unless like one of us was sick or something and couldn't help. But between the two of us, mm-hmm. I think that would be enough time. It's definitely not enough time for us to set up, but for tear down, it's a lot faster. And in theory, you're putting less things away.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of one of those things that gets you through the setup. It's, oh, well, it'll be fine because we'll have less stuff to put back in the tote afterwards. And then when you're putting stuff away and you feel like it's still packed pretty densely, you're like, what happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like,
even when you have a good market, it still feels like you've got a lot of stuff to put back in the bin.
It does, but it's really cool when you're tearing down and it's just like, I've got so much extra room. I had two bins, five bags, and now I've got like two bins and like nothing in bags, and it's just like, oh, I have extra bags. Why do I have extra bags? Oh, because of the stuff that I already saw. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling, but then it's just, for me, it's kind of like, wait, I got used to packing up five extra bags at the end of it plus the two bins, and now I don't have it, and it's just like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling, but it's still weird.
Have you guys noticed, I don't know if you always use the same finish at all, but have you noticed any differences between like durabilities of your finishes, like one better or worse?
I mean, I use the oil-based polyurethane for like the coasters or anything that might need heat and water protection, but I try not to use that one so much because of the fumes.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in a closed garage, it's just, it's not good. It's horrible in my lungs, and it just smells bad. So I try not to use that one too much. And if I have to, I open up the garage door. I feel the same fuminess with, like, I'm finishing bowls that are food safe. It's the same thing. But for the most part, I use polycrylic, the water-based polycrylic. And the wax resin I've been using. And I've been trying to keep an eye on how those are holding up over time.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of durability and, like, is it changing the color of the wood too much, or, you know, is it going rancid, or is it damaging the product? And so far I haven't noticed that, which is good, but we're also talking a couple of months of using that versus
mm-hmm.
a year or so. So still keeping an eye on that. Yeah, those are the finishes that I use. I haven't tried, like, tongue oil or any of those other ones.
Yeah, we don't have great data on it for ourselves, because we're not damaging pieces left and right, but, like, I don't know, in theory, a drying finish, like a polycrylic or your polyurethanes or whatever, should be more durable in terms of, like, resistance to damage, but they're, like, really hard to repair if they do get damaged. Whereas, like, a wax or a surface oil coat or something like that is, like...
You can just apply another.
Yeah, you just put a little bit more on and you're good to go. So, I don't know. Something to think about. But I also don't know... We don't have super, super hot to deal with a lot of times. I don't know if, like, the heat would melt like a beeswax top coat.
I don't know.
It would. I think if you put a thick enough beeswax top coat, it might, unless it's soaked into the wood. Because, I mean, I made the homemade food safe
mm-hmm.
sealer, which is beeswax, mineral oil, and mineral oil, beeswax, and coconut oil.
Mm-hmm.
So it essentially soaked into the wood. So it wasn't melting per se, but it wasn't like wax on top of the wood.
Yeah.
It was already melted in, so it was melting already into the wood.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see, especially with the heat here in the summer, I could see it because I've seen just the heat from the garage. I've seen some things, like, they just seem to get a little softer than they should. Yeah. So.
One summer, I think this was 2019. This was our Texas trip. I had a box of earrings that I had made that I had brought with us to Texas because one of my brother's friends had said she wanted some earrings and he had told her, like, oh, well, my sister's coming down. She can bring them or whatever. So I, you know, on our road trip, I brought this little box of earrings and then it sat in the car in the Texas heat. Where the inside of the car is like 150 degrees on a hot day, and they were all coated in shellac, and they got tacky. The shellac, like, it didn't melt, but it got tacky, and then when it cooled, you know, you bring your stuff into the AC, trying to, like, peel them apart, it, like, peeled the finish right off. So I know shellac will do that.
Didn't that happen with your keychains? The first pride that we did? You had those wood keychains, and you put a finish on them, and we had them all in, like, yes. a big Ziploc bag, and then when we opened them up, you pulled it out, and it was one giant keychain.
Ugh, that sucks.
I'm trying to remember what I had used to seal those. Because some of them were UV resin. Actually, I think those were resin. But I think I didn't seal them enough or correctly. I think I was kind of rushing it. So that might have been why they weren't completely cured, so they were still kind of soft. So I think that might have been partially why they stuck mm-hmm. together. Top three tips for transporting product. What do you think?
my top thing is make it as easy as possible for you. Like, I don't care if you have more things than everybody else to unload or you have to make more trips out to your car, whatever. Like, it, don't compare yourself to how everybody else is loading or packing or whatever. Like, do what you need to do in order for it to be a manageable process. So if that means you need to have multiple boxes, multiple totes, or you need to label your things, or you need to take more time or whatever, do it. Because at the end of the day, those other people aren't coming home to having to unload their car. You are. So do what you need to do in order to keep your sanity. For me, that's, I have the totes, they're labeled with a label maker, and then within those totes, you know, one is only art, and then the other tote has little boxes that are labeled, and like this little baggie has keychains, and this little baggie has bookmarks, and they're all labeled. So it's like everything has a spot, and I know that that might just be too much for some people, like they don't care that much to keep it organized, but I need it for me and my sanity. Like, so do what you need to do. And if you feel like a crazy person, you're probably not.
And find a routine for when you're packing up at the end of a show. Mm-hmm. So I find that if you do enough shows and you have a routine, then you'll find it much easier and less frustrating to put everything away because you know, all right, we are going to put all of the wall art away first. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to put all of the other, you know, usable things. Items. And then we're going to put away all of the small tchotchke type stuff. Then we're going to do the displays. Then we're going to disassemble the grates. This way, we as a couple know not to start working on something else before the other person is done doing what they're doing. We get kind of this routine, and although it takes a long time, it's not frustrating, and we're not screaming at each other.
This is true.
Like we'll put away, I at the end of when we're tearing down, I want to put away all the product first. Like, all of the product needs to be put wherever it's going to go. We can close up those bins. Now we can start pulling down, like, the displays and stuff, because, you know, if we take the product off the hanging grids, for instance, and you put them on the table, stacking them, what are you doing?
Right.
You're taking the chance of damaging right. them, which kind of negates the whole purpose, yeah. right? But now you've got, like, damage control to do afterwards. But if you take them, once you take them off the thing, off the easel or the hanging or whatever it is, you take it off, you put it wherever it's going to go in the bin that it's going to go in, now that's done, mm-hmm. right? And so that's what seems the worst. Plus, if we put all the product away, if we're, like, throwing things around, so to speak, like, in terms of the tablecloths or the displays or the easels, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. if it hits anything because it won't be hitting product because the product's already away. Yeah. So that's kind of what we do.
Having the labeled stuff on our end helps our breakdown routine go so much easier mm-hmm. because it's labeled, so David doesn't have to ask me, where do these go? Like, mm-hmm. like this box says ornaments, all the ornaments go in the ornament box. This bag says keychains, all the, and the way we kind of break down is we need our table space first in order to start taking the wall art. So we have to clear the table first. So all the bud vases need to get put up, all of the, you know, and having things labeled for each one of those. I like to be very organized with stuff like this. Like I need labels on all the things. It's like my digital like Google Drive, like everything is labeled. Everything is in a folder within a folder within a folder. It is all yes. labeled. Like, that's exactly how it yes. is with our shows too. Like, this box is for cutting boards. So David is like, okay, you start on that. I'm going to get the cutting boards. Okay. I'm going to get the bud vases. And it's not just, it helps with, like, the mental fatigue too, because I see this a lot with, like, parenting and moms. Like, moms are usually the ones having to make all the decisions and answering all the questions a bajillion times a day. And it's like, if you can take some of that off of me and you can do it yourself without having to ask me, like, great. So that's definitely helped us. It's like, you don't have to ask me, where does this go? Where do these go? Where's the box for this? Like,
yeah, 1,000%. Well, that's also, like, that's also why, like, I labeled the sleeves, right?
Yeah.
Because he'd look at it and go like, well, what goes in here? And then like every time
it's labeled
and ask me what goes in this sleeve, I have to stop doing what I'm trying to do, and I'm trying to go
speed. Right.
So if you did one side of the tent, I can do the other side of the tent. I can grab the bin and do that. You can grab a bin and do that stuff, right? So now we're tech teaming all the stuff, and it's taking us half the time to put stuff away versus if I have to stop and keep telling.
Right, if you have to stop what you're doing every time to answer a question, like, it's just...
Oh, I mean, that's the routine part, right? Like, that's what he was talking about, is, like, you find your routine. I think one tip is... try different routines. Try different things, because that's how you bump into how you're going to set up, right? And how you're going to break down, how you're going
to
package.
Yeah, it all comes down to the packaging. Like, how are you going to pack it up? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, it's trial and error, like you said. Like, that we transport and package similarly, but also differently at the same time. And... like, that works for you. Your system works for you. And, like, our system works for me.
Can I just elaborate on one thing with regards to what you just said? Changing the routine is absolutely a good thing. But don't change your entire routine. Change one thing and see if that makes a difference. Because if you change your entire routine... you're going to be stressed out, unless you're in a real easygoing market where there's not really a lot of pressure to set up. There's not a lot of pressure to break down. You've got flexibility in that situation. But if you're doing a regular market where, there's a time crunch. You don't alter your routines too much, or you're going to be ready to kill each other.
Yeah. I mean, it takes us about 2.5 hours-ish to set up, it, like, when we get there. So we've had times when we've had to load in 1.5 hours before the show is supposed to start. Mm. So, like, it's I'm stressing, but, like, I know at least that, like, this everything is labeled, right? So it's just like, okay, I'm not sitting going, where's the canopy bin with all the canopy and the tablecloths and stuff? Like, okay, give me the canopy bin, because I know, like, we've set up the tent, we've set up the tables. I can just go and throw that up. And then he's just like, well, how do you want the grid? So he can just grab the display bin and build whatever he needs to, you know, whatever display thing that we need. But that's also about the transportation and packaging, because at least everything is organized, mm-hmm. right? So we know what's in the bin. And when I've packed up product, I've tried to keep, like, I don't label my bins like you do, like, okay, this is art and this is ornaments, but, like, I've tried to keep one bin. Like, if I open the bin and see this one thing, I know that that's the fine art bin, if you will, right? And if I open up the other bin, that's the product, not so fine art stuff.
Yeah.
So we kind of know, okay, well, this is probably going to go in that bin.
Let me give you an example. Oh. She has a bin called the canopy bin. It has the tablecloths. It has a fan. It has the Edison lights. It has... you know what it doesn't have in it?
The canopy.
The canopy. There's no canopy in that bin.
But let me explain that real quick, though. It's because... when we first had the tent, we did not keep the canopy on the tent. We used to take the canopy off and put it in the bin, which is why I named it canopy. But what happened one time is that we didn't bring the canopy bin with us, because we didn't think we were going to need the canopy bin. Guess what?
We needed the canopy.
So he had to go back. He had to drive back to the house, and we were 40 minutes away from the house. So he had to drive all the way back to bring the canopy bin. So someone has said, well, just leave the canopy. You can fold it down, keep the canopy, and just put it into the bag. So that's what we've done now, and I just refuse to change the name on it. Because I know...
well, both of you know what it is.
Name on it? Exactly. I know if I change the name on it, he's going to be like, the what? The what bin?
No, it's the canopy bin. That's just what it is
it'll
now.
It'll always be the canopy bin.
It's the canopy bin.
It's the canopy bin that doesn't have a canopy in it.
That's fine.
It's funny, because he brought that to my attention one day, and I was just like, you know what? You're right. It doesn't have a canopy in it anymore.
But as soon as you change the name, you're not going to remember what it is.
Exactly.
And they're labeled with the masking tape that's written on, so it's real easy to change.
No, don't do it. Don't. Just leave it.
It's going to say. There it is. It'll always be that. So.
Okay.
Cool.
Any other tips?
No, do you have any last tips? I think, no, I think that
I
was
I think so.
Oh, any. Ooh, plug time. Plug any time, plugs? Plug time, plug time. You guys have something to plug.
Oh, the Timber Doodle Retreat. I'm sorry. It's late. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was looking at the clock because you said it was late. But I will plug the Timber Doodle Retreat. I have to get up at like 7. Listen, if you're listening to the Pyro Toasty Talks podcast, then you already know that we're a barrel of laughs. So come hang out with us in person for a week in the great outdoors. Do art. We'll be in Shenandoah National Park hiking and arting. There'll be good food, and we'll take care of all of the other things. You just have to get yourself there and get a ticket. So they're on our website, right?
Yep, Timber Doodle Retreat.
They're on our website. It's the Timber Doodle Retreat. It's in May of 2025. Limited spots, so get in now. Yep. Mm. Get in now, Zona.
Hey, we don't direct pressure people.
I'm shark selling up in here.
Whoa, hold on. Don't Why am I getting a look?
Like that. I have to pass on the heat somehow.
I said we have to look at the budget.
Absolutely. I mean, we try to keep it as absolutely affordable as possible. So the total is $1,850, which is not bad. But, I mean, it's still a chunk of change. So, yeah, you absolutely have to look at your budgets and...
I mean, I think that price is absolutely reasonable. It really is. But it is just a matter of...
Yeah.
Is it in the budget?
Right.
That's the only
yep.
thing.
So, no, I get that. Totally.
So, I this is not so much a plug, but more of a, hey, cool, guess what we're doing is... we are going to see about selling prints. I've been looking into how we can do prints for some of Zona's work, and we found a company that we can use if we can get some high-res photos of some of her pieces and bring them with us at markets so that we can give people something on offer for people who like her work but can't afford her work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to come out. I don't know what we're going to price them at. But I see how well prints do for other artists and other mediums. So I think we're going to give it a stab. Well, you know, we'll keep the community abreast of how that does, because I'm sure other people would find value in doing that as well. So we're going to take a couple of her pieces that have gotten the most attention, and we'll bring some prints with us the next time and maybe put them up on the website too.
Nice. I laugh because he's talking about prints, and my big question is, of what?
Yeah.
Like, what piece are you talking about?
Oh, the ship.
What pieces are you talking about?
The ship, the okay. Tribal mother, the lighthouse, possibly the dragon, the Chinese dragon, the one that just sold.
I was going to say, the one that sold that we don't actually have a high-res picture of.
We might
of.
Have a high-res. That's where we have to look.
We have good pictures, but I don't know if I would consider them high-res.
Kick in the door of the customer and be like, excuse me, I still own this IP.
This guy would totally be down with that. This guy bought, like, 5 pieces from us at Pride.
He's
literally
the one who bought most of the pieces. It was actually... what I want to do, if I had to choose, I would do Sakura, Enola.
Yeah. Those are 2 good options.
Probably Beacon. Maybe Beacon. I would do Tribal Mall.
And the boat.
See, I'm not in love with the boat.
We don't know which pieces we're going to do yet, but we will keep people updated on how they sell and how they look. And if we find a company that we're happy with, we'll... we'll share that too, so that if that's something that you want to do, and we'll do a blog post about it too, so that if it's something that you want to do, then you can do that too.
And of course, the company that he found, I am absolutely intrigued with, because it's got a cat. It's got a cat logo. Mascot, that's the word. It's a cat mascot.
A cat Scott.
So I'm all about that.
Our local bookstore. has a family of cats, like 5 or 6 cats. But like the main cat that everybody knows, her name is Squeaky. I know. And a local author has written a couple of like kids' books about Squeaky. I know. I know. It's so cute.
The used bookstore by us has, they take in strays, and they always have cats all over the place.
Yeah. And they're free, they're up for adoption, but you could always just go and play with them. Because they're free wander, and it's really cool. I very much wanted to take like 2 or 3 of them and
put Brian them in your purse and just walk out with them.
Yeah.
All right, you want to bring us home?
All right. Closing it out, David.
Oh, I don't do closings. I only do openings. This has been the Pyro Toasty Talks podcast. What a great episode. See us next, whenever Brian releases these, on...
In 2 weeks.
Whatever channel Brian distributes them on.
That would be Apple and Spotify.
Remember to follow us on all the socials, Facebook and Instagram. You can follow It's David and Renee at It's David and Renee. You can follow BZ Furfur at BZ _ Furfur. And you can follow the podcast at Pyro Toasty Talks. We also have a Discord channel. Check the website for details on how to connect with that, pyrotoastytalks.com. And as always,
stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Heyo.